How are software companies empowering amateurs and professionals alike to compose original music in collaboration with machines? To learn more, we are pleased to welcome Drew Silverstein to the show. Drew is a co-founder and the CEO of Amper Music, a company offering an artificial intelligence composer, performer, and producer that creates unique music tailored to any content instantly. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 11 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. I'm not a musician, so when I think of a composer, I imagine a Mozart or Beethoven alternating between their piano and their sheet of music, scratching out the next great symphony. Of course, music composition today looks nothing like that romantic and antiquated view. The work is likely being done on a computer and is unlikely to ever even be played by any physical instrument. The range of sounds available is incredibly diverse, ranging from recorded samples of traditional physical instruments – you can have a good piano sound if you want it – to a seemingly endless array of digitally native sounds and variants. The power of these tools is impressive, as in mere seconds, the skilled operator can put one instrument on top of another, and then play it back to see what they have. Similar to the way software has empowered creatives of every type, music composition tools have enabled the human creator intense superpowers for years and even decades at this point. However, at the center of it still is the human creator. Sure, they may not be playing the actual C chord on a physical piano like Mozart. They may merely have the machine insert a C. But they are using their training as a composer to guide their choices, and thanks to the efficiency and breadth offered by software, work with a speed and degree of power that would make the great composers of yesteryear swoon. That was a pretty good place to be. But now, thanks to machine learning, the state-of-the-art process for making original music is experiencing another upgrade. While humans remain integral to the process, just as we have in a compositional environment without physical instruments, the latest AI-enabled technologies automate core aspects of the creationary process, even begging questions about the very nature and definition of creation. To get an inside look at how AI is changing music composition, we welcome Drew Silverstein to the show. Drew is a co-founder and the CEO at Amper Music, a company offering an artificial intelligence composer, performer, and producer that creates unique music tailored to any content instantly. While Drew's company Amper is a technology company, his training and interests come very much from the music side. Let's listen.
I grew up wanting to be a film composer and was fortunate while I was in high school to go to something called Grammy Camp, which gave aspiring film composers an opportunity to come to LA and rescore a Fox movie and record it at the Newman Stage. And during that process, met who ultimately became my boss after college, Chris Lennertz, a very accomplished and award-winning composer. When I came back from that summer, went to Vanderbilt University to study music composition and theory as well as Italian, and continued pursuing that drive, interned for Chris for a couple years, and ultimately when I graduated went to work for him at Sonic Fuel Studios in Los Angeles along with his partner Tim Nguyen. And I was really fortunate, started from the bottom but got a front row seat to the film music world, everything from how the music is composed to how the relationships work and how you think about the creative challenges of melding a director and a producer's vision with music and with hopefully something that gives an audience an amazing experience.
Movies, along with video games, are two of the primary outlets for original digital music today. So it is no surprise to learn that Drew has a background in the scoring of film. Let's learn about how that experience inspired him to create Amper.
A few years into that process, you know, my ultimate co-founders and I, Sam Michael and I, would speak with a lot of directors and editors that we'd work with who would say, look, we love working with you when we have time and budget to focus on music as an artistic part of what we're doing, of this project. But then they would say, for a lot of the content they create, they have neither of those two ingredients, time or budget, which often meant they had to license stock or pre-created music, and they'd really get frustrated by that process because of the time it took to search for the music, the legal and financial licensing issues, the lack of creativity, collaboration, uniqueness, and so on. And so they would say, could you just write the music for us instead? And most of the time, we would disappoint them and say no, because the economics of a boutique studio didn't line up well with that of mass music licensing. So then we said to ourselves, as composers, we are experts at translating music into emotion and emotion into music. And so we suggested, what if we could create a creative AI that gives you the same collaborative experience of working with us within the time and economic framework that you need? And this idea was received quite enthusiastically. And so just over 5 years ago, we got to work and started building what is today Amper.
There are important lessons nestled in Drew's story, relevant not just to the use of music and the potential role of musicians in the creative process, but broadly to creatives of all types. Particularly for creatives in the first world, where the cost of living requires, for example, hundreds of thousands of dollars to own even a modest home, there is some minimum amount of income required to both do professional creative production and live a middle class or better life. Oftentimes, similar to Drew's experience talking with directors and editors, there isn't the budget available to acquire original and custom assets. Sticking with the music example, stock content is a hack around that. For a long time, people have been recording everything from simple sound effects to longer compositions, not for a specific project, but as an end to itself, and enabling others to license that content for their larger projects, whether it be an ad, a presentation, a video game, or even a movie. On one hand, there's nothing wrong with this. Sound and music make the creative output better, and this enables it to be affordably acquired. On the other hand, we have in essence already automated the function. Rather than a human collaborator who is engaged and interested in the final output, bringing their own vision and skill about audio and storytelling to the project, someone who is unlikely to have specialized knowledge and training is merely culling existing content that is affordable, available, and findable. It reduces sound and music to something less than the other skills being exercised by the creative team. Skills such as writing and videography. The voice, the language, the soul that writers and directors fight for in other aspects of the creation are less likely to be matched by the audio. There's nothing inherently wrong with this, but it seems like the chalk line of where a core collaborator ends and stock content begins is a product of budget and tradition, as opposed to executing an ideal creative process. In any event, with all of that preamble in mind, let's learn about what Drew and his partners then decided to do with Amper, their company that uses machine learning to compose original music in seconds, and how that was received.
You know, not only was the world of machine learning, and we'll just call it broader, you know, AI, not at peak hype, but even more so, the world of music had not even, you know, music composition, creation, was even further away from being in vogue. You know, a lot of people certainly had pitchforks out for us at the beginning. Fortunately, I think, hopefully, those views have evolved as we've been able to share more about what we do and what we believe. But you're right. When we started this in 2014, the landscape was incredibly different. And, you know, I think in addition to the clear ask and demand from the colleagues that we'd worked with, I think we also were able to look at the macro trends in the entertainment and content markets, right? Content growing exponentially, whether it be video content or podcasting or games or AR, VR, or of course text or audio, whatever it might be. And at the same time, there's a limit to the amount of content that could have unique music that was both accessible, affordable, and customizable. And so Amper not only serves to help, you know, film directors and producers, but also to help empower any content creator, regardless of their musical ability, to express themselves creatively through music. Whether you're making a video for a social media platform or a podcast, like the one we're speaking about now, or a game, you know, our goal is as a company to enable anyone around the world to be able to express themselves creatively through music, regardless of their background, expertise, or access to resources.
It's an interesting dynamic that Amper is only further estranging musicians from original music. Given Drew's background and obvious passion for making music, sure, these are trends that predate not just Amper, but Drew's career as well. But with so many of these machine learning technologies, there's an odd cannibalization of the skilled maker. Original music will become increasingly prevalent and of better quality as well, thanks to software made by Amper and companies like them. Creators, broadly speaking, will be able to use original music in their works. The only thing missing will be the musician, with all due respect to the software providing the sounds. In order to understand how creatives can use software like this, Drew takes us inside of the Amper experience.
So Amper is designed to be able to be used by anyone regardless of their experience and background. We like to say there are minimum required inputs, maximum potential control. And what we mean by that is with Amper Score, which is our web app, that's a product specifically designed for less musical content creators who might otherwise license pre-created music. All you need to know to create unique and professional music tailored to your content are three things: the style of music you want to create, the mood you want to convey, and the length of your piece of music. But that's all you know. In a matter of seconds, you'll make something brand new. Now, you have the option, but certainly not the requirement, to provide other input, right? Spotting notes, when should things happen? Instrumentation, tempo, harmonic rhythmic structure, and so on. And what's important is that once the music's created, you have the ability to edit anything and give feedback to Amper. So you could go to the Amper Score, you could say, Amper, we want to make this faster, we want to accent a different moment in the video, and we don't like this instrument, we want to reorchestrate it, and let's rethink the rhythmic structure, whatever you might want to do. And the entire purpose there is to say, music is very subjective. There's no right answer. And we want to make sure that our tool, in addition to just being wildly amazing as a composer itself, is an effective collaborator and an effective supporter of the vision of each individual user. Now, via products like our API, which we integrate into content creation tools and distribution platforms, you can control the music that Amper creates down to the note level. So you could, in essence, build an entire digital audio workstation on top of Amper if you so chose. But it comes back to the idea that we'll say, you know, Amper should be a valuable tool for those who are less musical and should be an amazing superpower for those who are already musical.
As someone who was alive when 8-track tapes were still a relevant technology, that is incredible. The level of WYSIWYG, or what you see is what you get, customization for an untrained human in the process is truly magical. And it would certainly benefit that process if the person is a trained audio specialist. However, these people would shift in their actual tasks from composer or performer into creative director or curator. This resembles other things we've heard this season, especially what Lily Smith shared is happening in the world of architecture. The process of generation is the confluence of human inputs and parameters and machine creation. Then the process of getting from a rough draft or prototype to a finished and complete thing brings back the human to varying degrees. Humans are more hands-on, but still using tools to complete their work, ranging from the typical software that has made up our core tool set for decades to these new smartware-infused solutions that are more useful to broadly trained creatives, not just specialists. Let's listen as Drew calls on the history of music and technology in order to transition into the prevailing trends of what is happening today.
Yeah, well, I think one of the trends of technology, you know, throughout all of our history is that as technology advances, two things happen. The time it takes to learn how to express oneself creatively dramatically decreases, and the cost of purchasing the proper tools to do so also decreases. And in music, we can think, you know, all the way back to the 1700s, right, in Bach's era, when to create music, you had to, first of all, know a whole host of information. You had to, you know, work for a church or have a wealthy sponsor or patron. There's no such thing as recorded music. Everything was live, right? And that was the process. You know, use parchment and quill to write the thing. That was the process by which you wrote music. And then we fast forward, and eventually there was analog recording, and then there was digital music, and then there was mobile. And with each evolution in technology, the barriers to expressing oneself creatively through music were dramatically decreased, right? The time it takes to learn to express oneself and the cost of purchasing proper tools to do so. In that manner, you know, we see AI Music and Amper as the next step in this centuries-long, if not longer, progression of technological innovation democratizing creative ability. And that's true in not only just in the creative world, but in almost any other vertical as well. And so, you know, one of the things that we focus on and that we like, you know, to be very candid about is that on one hand, whether or not we exist as a company, like this is happening, AI music is here. But more importantly, we exist because we think this is such a positive impact and can have such a positive impact on our society. Right? We think the ability for anyone to take an idea, turn it into music, or for a musician to take something that they're already working on and make it better, faster, more creative, whatever they want to do, is incredibly powerful. And we're a team of musicians, a team of composers who also happen to be very good at the functional areas we focus on a day-to-day basis at Amper. And those things together come together to form a company not only with a bleeding edge technology and product solution suite, but also a core mission that we hope is aligned with many in the creative community, which is one around, you know, augmentation of human and of creative ideas, not necessarily total displacement.
As Drew says, this is happening. Whether we like it or not, whether we are excited or scared, whether we will be helped or hurt, the proverbial horse is out of the barn on these technologies. Amper is just one company working on these problems in music, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of global companies working on similar solutions for creative tasks of every type. This is the future, one where the machines aren't just tools that make our creation go faster, but tools that generate creative output for us. And oftentimes, they're being made by creators, by people whose training and background was not aligned with this new world that they are helping usher in. While there are, of course, many narrow-minded, profit-seeking entrepreneurs and venture capitalists throughout these emerging industries, many of the passionate leaders are people like Drew, people who consider themselves musicians and humanists, who aspire to help and improve the human condition, and who also hope to become wealthy in the process of doing it. Of course, all of this is against a backdrop of a public that is confused and even intimidated by the notion of artificial intelligence.
One of the challenges that we have in the AI music world is that there are a lot of preconceived notions for what that means. And often those notions are informed by Hollywood movies, right? So I think everyone instantly thinks of Terminator and Skynet whenever we do AI, right? And that's inherently a negative portrayal of the potential of something like Amper. While it makes an excellent movie, and you know I'm a fan of many of those Terminator movies, it's not necessarily an effective portrayal and reflection of reality. And so part two of that is there is historically a very much opaque understanding of what something like Amper can do, right? You hear AI music and you know your mind goes wild with what this thing must be doing. And there's a very natural human reaction to things that we don't understand, which is fear. That's part of human evolution, is if we can fear things we don't understand, we'll survive. And so in no way do I fault anyone for that initial reaction. However, one of our biggest focuses from a public-facing perspective is to talk about what we do as much as possible and to remove the opaqueness and replace it with transparency so people can understand what we do, what Amper is capable of, what it's not capable of, how it can be beneficial, where it might be utilized for different individuals. And the goal of that, it's not always to convince someone that we're correct, because we'll never win that 100% of the time. But it's to make sure that we all share the same factual foundation that we can then have a productive discussion out of. Right? I'd love to convince everyone that our worldview is the right worldview. I don't expect that to be the case. But what I do think is critical and what I do think we can do is make sure that everyone understands the same foundational truths around what this is and what it can do. And then from there, we're able to have a productive conversation about the merits or the detriments of what we're creating. And what we typically find is most people, when listened to and when spoken with candidly and honestly, tend to move past that opaque reaction of fear into a transparent understanding. And typically what we see is people will either get very excited about what this can be, or they might say, look, it's not for me, but I understand it. I'm no longer afraid. And, you know, I wish you the best of luck. And that's really such an important thing, because the more we can have the general societal discourse be about implications and use case and things based on fact and less based on media hyperbole, I think the more successful our society's understanding of and integration of technologies like Amper will be.
Happily, that's just what we're trying to do here with Creative Next 2. The present and future are real, and much as we might like to slow or stop them, we can't. But we can understand them. We can benefit from them. And we can help guide them in ways that hopefully do the most good and the least damage. What are Drew's thoughts on how work and jobs in music will change?
Yeah, I think one important thing to make sure everyone is on the same page with is that our job, the way we do things today, will continue to evolve as it always has, right? And we think our job is just a matter of tasks in a sequence that accomplish something specific, that get a goal done. Whereas our career is all about helping others achieve their goals. And the manner in which we do that will change, right? We used to communicate via written letters only, and then it became telegraphs, and then it became phone calls, and then it became email, now it's text. We're still communicating, we're still conveying messages. But how we do that will change. And in the same way in music, the jobs of the music world that exist today will certainly evolve and be very different in a matter of years. And they, you know, in the same way that they're very different now than they were 10 years ago. The goal and the career of making music should not be diminished at all, because that goal still exists for a very worthy reason, to help others accomplish their goals in music. So what I would say to those both coming up in music and also those who are already successful and experienced is to understand that technologies evolve, the way we do things will change, be accepting of that, be on the forefront of the adoption of those new technologies and their tools, but also be mindful that the core value of why there is value in music is not because of the process by which it's made. It's because we're making art and people value art. You could imagine, you know, 20, 30 years ago when digital audio workstations first came out, right? That changed the workflow of music creation dramatically, but it didn't undermine the existence of a creative class, certainly of a professional creative class. And in fact, did the opposite. It encouraged more and more people to get involved and to be able to be involved in music making. And AI music will continue to do the same thing, just at a much larger and more impactful scale.
That's an excellent point. Technology has consistently, for essentially all of human history, expanded as opposed to shrunk creative opportunities. Rather than the same amount of things be made by less people, technology has enabled more things to be made, just differently. Drew alluded earlier to there being an upper end of the opportunities for making sound and music in movies and games, but is there really? Or more precisely, is that upper limit anything even approaching the total content of what is being made today, given that tomorrow, much, much more content will need to be made? What seems clear is that things will be faster and cheaper, so that in an artisan mindset, the same spend in the future will allow more quality and craft compared to today. Or in a production mindset, the same quality and craft of today will merely be faster and cheaper. There is a third scenario that is possible too, that the quality potential is so much higher given the technology of tomorrow that sound and music will increase in importance to include more time and budget, and the quality will be dramatically better. That might not happen, but it is at least possible. Certainly, the first two scenarios are essential certainties. As someone deeply involved in AI and emerging technologies, what is Drew most looking forward to in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I get excited about the ability for AI, broadly speaking, to make more and more complex tasks and goals and endeavors accessible to more and more people for less and less cost. Again, I think as our technology evolves, we see AI dramatically decreasing the cost of accomplishing certain tasks and dramatically decreasing the amount of information that any one person needs to know to be successful at that task. And whether it's music, whether it's farming, whether it's creating a script, whether it's just doing, you know, more rote business tasks. And I think what we are going to arrive at in the not too distant future is a world in which the ability to complete a task is fully democratized and anyone can do nearly anything with the assistance of an AI. The value then of our human input is going to be on the creative input and the creative direction. So that, you know, as people, how can we direct the workforce and the work effort of these machines to do something that's meaningful to us? Now, I think certainly there are ethical concerns when we're dealing with AI in areas where it affects, you know, life and death. And that's, you know, medicine, that's military applications. Certainly that's even, you know, self-driving cars, where the implications and the consequences of the decisions that we make now will certainly, you know, affect decisions around who lives and who dies, or how we approach those. And that requires, you know, continued investment of our time to figure out what are the things that we believe and how do we want to handle those situations? You know, fortunately for us at Amper, music is less life and death than going to war. And so we're able to, and we're afforded the luxury to not necessarily have to be as existentially concerned about those issues. Still something that we think about a lot, but if Amper makes a good song or a bad song, someone's not going to die. And I think in the areas where that wouldn't be true are ones in which we've really got to be mindful about where we as a society decide there should be guardrails and where we decide there should be free reign.
Anyone can do nearly anything with the assistance of AI. While that is a broad statement, it speaks to the realities of the current and next generation of smartware technologies. The specific knowledge and training of the past is appropriated by the machine. You need to have good taste, a good ear, literacy in music. You need to be able to look at, say, a movie set to a score and have discernment about what is and is not working and why. But while it might be helpful if you can just manually edit the composition in some granular and specific ways, that is increasingly a nice to have, not a requirement. It takes me back to the old George Nelson book, How to See, which is teaching people visual and environmental literacy. Those become the key knowledge and learnings of this automated future. It makes me think of the late Roger Ebert, for whom I had the opportunity to contribute to one of his books as a graduate student. In this future world, he may have been a filmmaker as opposed to film critic, his work as a young man on Beyond the Valley of the Dolls notwithstanding. The opportunities shift from people who are trained in tools to people who are critical and creative thinkers. In an orchestra, there is a single conductor presiding over dozens of musicians. In this emerging future, it's as though each musician instead becomes the conductor of their own private orchestra, at least metaphorically speaking. Finally, looking to the years ahead, what does Drew hope to achieve at Amper?
Yeah, so our goal at Amper on a business perspective is we at Amper build the foundational tools and technologies in the 21st century to enable creative expression through music. And as we are more and more successful, we expect that every piece of music that's created around the world should be made by or in collaboration with the technologies and products that we create. And so that's our scope of success that we hope and anticipate achieving. We also want to make sure that every person who wants to be musical and wants to express musical ideas is capable of doing that. So that every person who says, I'm going to make music, I'm going to involve technology in some level, that Amper is a core ingredient in that recipe as well. Now, we're certainly, we're not there yet, and we've got a long way to go to achieve that level of ubiquity, but we're certainly well on our way, and it's something that I think we believe is a really powerful mission to unlock creative expression for billions and billions of people around the world.
Thanks again to our guest, Drew Silverstein. So, John, how did our interview with Drew impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
Well, I thought it was interesting when Drew and I talked a little bit about how they got started with Amper and what the genesis story was of that. There was definitely an economic component to the origin story. So, you know, as a boutique composition shop, they obviously couldn't take on jobs that weren't going to be profitable, or else they would, you know, no longer exist as a business. So the idea that there could be this, you know, AI-driven creative, you know, music composition appealing to their clients who might maybe had smaller budgets and appealing to them because then they could serve more clients. So there's this economic incentive that gets that shapes the way these, you know, in this case, the way, you know, Amper starts. And it's also true for, you know, any other kind of software that's assisting creative people to do more than they could yesterday, right? So one of the sort of lines of inquiry then I think is about in the world of creative content, like what are the economic incentives and where will that drive tools of, you know, creation? So so there's some obvious some obvious ones right now are, you know, there's an explosion in you know, this is the golden age of television or cable television. So
today is the golden age of cable television?
I think so.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't even know cable television existed anymore.
Sure. I mean, the HBOs and the, right, like the okay. storytelling.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Cable using the antiquated term.
So sort of prime TV.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can see that there's need for more of this. And so you can imagine that that's going to incent people to create software that will serve those needs. So you can create more streaming, or call it the golden age of streaming, right? So we can be more precise. But the economic incentives are what's going to drive how creative tools get to market.
Yeah.
Just it's the nature of our system. And I think we've largely focused on the interactions between people and software and, you know, machines generally, whereas the economic incentives are going to play, you know, also play a pivotal role. So that sort of opened my eyes to that.
You know, our conversation with Drew took me back to a couple years ago, where for a different project, you and I talked to Pierre Barou of Ava Technologies, which is working on basically a competitor to Amper. And wow, it's remarkable how much farther ahead Amper is today from a product perspective than Ava was at that point. In fact, you know, we had Ava make a computer-generated theme song for our other project called The Digital Life. And while it was perfectly fine, we had very little input or ability for feedback. It was super black box. Now with Amper, and more recently returning to Ava to see what they're up to, it's all moving really fast. It's a reminder that this is highly emergent and dynamic. And what seems incredible today, a year from now, will look slower and behind comparatively.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, that's a good point generally for the way that these AI-driven software tools are going to develop. So we're very much at, we'll call it an early adopter stage right now. These tools are perhaps they're prevalent in a more enterprise environment, or they're starting to become prevalent, but they certainly don't have like the level of market penetration that you'd expect of, you know, sort of widely accepted software tools. This is not Word, right? This is some really more obscure, right? Now, we can expect that at the same time early adopters are picking up, you know, whatever these tool sets are, there's going to be another wave of tools coming, but almost before the early adopters can, you know, sort of make the adjustment to the current set of tools.
Yeah.
So I think that makes for an interesting dynamic. It does make the early adopters of these tools pretty important. And you wonder if there's going to be an AI have and AI have nots in, you know, various businesses sort of across the economy, just because the nature of these things is you're going to start with one set and then sort of anticipate switching again, you know, to the next set of tools that come along.
Yeah.
I don't know if that creates sort of distance between a business that is leveraging these and a business that isn't, but I suspect in the long term that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you might be right. So what did Drew say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
I thought that Drew's emphasis on, you know, the creative direction as being key, you know, a key human element in the work, you know, no matter what level of AI and automation there was, both now and the future, it would be the creative direction, the choice making, the taste making, as you've referred to it. Now, that's to me. There's this central conflict between, you know, what things will get automated out and what things will be, you know, uniquely human, both, you know, in the next decade and then, you know, further out. And so I think it's an interesting discussion because we honestly don't really know. And I suspect that we're going to evolve our capabilities in concert with these sets of tools. So there's going to be, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, there's going to be a different context and set of parameters. And I imagine that the broad umbrella of creative direction will probably hold true, but we're going to be changing the way we do things alongside the development of these tools. And we frankly, we can see a path, you know, maybe a similar one from software automation, right? So would you would probably argue that, you know, as a graphic designer, you can do a lot more creative direction now than you could as someone who's pasting up boards.
Yeah.
So I think the direction is probably right, but there's going to be a lot of nuance there, and there's going to be a lot of things that get swept up into software that we have no idea yet. So I think that's a good flag to put in, you know, to aim for, that humans will always have the creative control. And at the same time, I wonder how that's going to play out.
Yeah, I was surprised at how accessible the technology already is. I mean, that it's basically a plain language WYSIWYG solution with deep and granular specifics and how you can guide not just the generation of initial pieces, but the editing of those pieces as well. I mean, one of the challenges around traditional creative software tools, they're for the most part professional tools. You know, you need to be trained both in the area and in the software. It's a lot of work to use them well. But we've seen with other guests how these various things are trending toward being accessible to amateurs. And this is an example of where it's already here and can be used, you know, by somebody like me, and I'm less than an amateur. So that's pretty sweet. John, what did you learn from Drew that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
So I think one of the things that I took away from this conversation was that, and you hinted at this as well when you were remarking on the sort of evolution of Ava's software tools, you know, and Amper's tools over time, that this is all moving at a rate of speed that is unusual for the amount of sort of capabilities and leverage you're getting out of software versus amount of time, right?
Yeah.
So maybe unusual isn't the right word, but it's picking up speed, right? So the chances that you're going to have to revisit a tool that you're using next year is highly likely, right? Like, is this state of the art anymore? And is this going to do what I need it to do? And is there much more than I can do with, you know, this next iteration of tool set? So I think for myself, I've always been a little aggravated at having to upgrade software that was just created to create profit for somebody.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think that's actually changing. I think there's actually increasing capabilities that are sort of rapidly changing things. So I find that exciting. And it's also a reminder to me that just because I investigated something 12 months ago doesn't make it true today. So, you know, to sort of revisit assumptions around these things more often.
Yeah, it's like things we talked about in season one of the show already need updating. It's quick. Yeah, for me, you know, as we keep doing these interviews, I see my creative toolkit of the future getting bigger and bigger. It's kind of magical. It's like, oh, you know, there's this new thing that will be in my toolkit now, music, which I would not have thought before. So I'm starting to think about what education will I require to be really great with these things, to use them effectively. And using Amper as an example, I personally have good storytelling skills and a good aesthetic sense, but I'm ignorant about music as a form, as I've mentioned a couple times. So I want to start educating myself, figuring out what is the gap between my good taste and ability to imagine or tell a rich story to having a deep enough understanding about the form of music so I can nimbly use tools like Amper in the things I create. And that's a pretty exciting place to be in, I have to say. So each episode, we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, what form of media would you like to create original works in that is as simple as a plain language WYSIWYG input and editing? Think about that for yourself, and feel free to tweet at us about it, at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co, that's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission? Bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most. Healthcare, education, and public service to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is, that's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. Thanks to our guest, Drew Silverstein, whom you can connect with at Drew Silverstein. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 3, Episode 11. But here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
I think when we first started this project, we naively thought we could just kind of like hand our back catalog to some algorithm, and the algorithm would analyze that and spit out new songs that would be, you know, new yacht songs. And the project, the art would be about committing to that, whatever it was. As soon as we started working on this, we realized that, you know, we're not there yet, thank God. You know, algorithms can't just spit out pop songs. If they could, the airwaves would be full of them.